Today the Torah portion is Baha'alotcha, which the beginning of the parsha might be on, on 9:10 is where the Torah portion begins, but we're going to start today on page 928, and this class is given in memory of Bnei Pesel Vassal Pesach Halevi and in memory of my father, Maharav Gershom Ben Harav Ben Sin.
Okay, so we're going in the middle of the parsha. There's a very, it happens between Moshe and God, an unusual conversation in the way it was handled. We'll see that Moshe seems to be behaving out of character. There are a number of times through the Torah when Moshe seems to have a heavy burden on him, when the Jews complain, and he deals with it and he takes care of it as a leader does. But in this particular story, Moshe seems to be acting out of character. So let's go through the story a little bit, and I will read. I'm going to read the translation. I just have an easier translation to read here. So it's very similar to the one that you have. It's page 929, 11, 4. Okay? But the multitude amongst them began to have strong cravings. Then even the children of Israel once again began to cry, and they said, "Who will feed us meat? We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt, free of charge, the cucumbers, the watermelons, the leeks, the onions, the garlics. But now our bodies are dried out, for there's nothing at all. We have nothing but manna to look at." Moses heard the people weeping with their families, each one at the entrance of their tent. The Lord Hashem became very angry at Moses, considered it evil. Moses said to the Lord, and this is where it seems to be out of character for Moshe. "Why have you treated your servant so badly? Why have I not found favor in your eyes that you placed the burden of this entire people upon me? Did I conceive this entire people? Did I give birth to them that you say to me, 'Carry them into your bosom as the nurse carries the suckling to the land you promised their forefathers'? Where can I get meat to give all these people? For they're crying to me, 'Give us meat to eat.' Alone I cannot carry this entire people, for it is too hard for me. If this is the way you treat me, please kill me if I have found favor in your eyes so that I not see my own misfortune." And then the Lord Hashem said to Moshe, "Assemble for me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be the people's elders and officers, and you shall take them to the tent of meeting. They shall stand there with you. I will come down and speak with you there, and I will increase the spirit that is upon you and bestow it upon them. Then they will bear the burden of the people with you, that you need not bear it alone. And to the people you shall say, 'Prepare yourselves, for tomorrow you shall eat meat, because they have cried in the ears of the Lord, saying, "Who will feed us meat? For we had it better in Egypt. Therefore the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. You shall eat it not one day, not 2 days, or not 5 days, not 10 days, not 20 days, basically until it comes out of your ears. But even for a full month, until it comes out of your nose and nauseates you, because you have despised the Lord who is amongst you, and you cried before him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt?'" Okay. So this is, I think everyone would agree, is quite unusual for the way Moshe handles issues amongst the Jewish people. We have seen before when there was no food, and Moshe said, "Wait, I'll speak to God, he'll take care of it." There was no man, and then he came back to the Jews and he told them there's going to be man. There was no water, he spoke to God, he says, "What am I going to do? These people, they're going to stone me soon." God says, "Don't worry, take this, you speak to the rock, etc." And then there was one time he had to mix into the water, hyssop. And the hyssop, and it becomes sweet. So each time there was a problem, Moshe dealt with it as a leader. Usually, here's the issue and says, "This is what we do." Or if the problem would have been, if it would have been a complaint that was invalid, he would have said to them, "Listen, your complaint is invalid. You have food. Don't bother me." But more often than not, Jews are always complaining about food. Food's not good. There's not enough. There's this. "Are you sure? How was it in Shul? Was there food? Oh, is there?" You know. Here, it seems to be handled very differently than usual. And Jews want beef. Where's the beef? Show me the beef. Where's the barbecue? how come they don't serve sashimi at the Kiddush? And Moshe is handling it very differently. Basically what he says, God, I want to die. I want to die. I can't take this anymore. What did you give me this job for? Why on earth take me now, as they say, right? Just take me now. I don't need to do this anymore.
Because they were yelling at and they were upset with him.
Well, the Jews were demanding, but Jews are always demanding. Can you imagine leading millions of Jews that it's not demanding? I mean, leading the Jews, if you talk about pressure, a leader under pressure, Moshe had the Jewish people in Egypt. He had to get them out of Egypt. That's pressure. Paro is pressure. Coming to the Yam Suf, to the sea. And the question is, what do we do? Some people say we better go back to Egypt. What did you take us out for? And Moshe has to tell them, just go forward. So there were many, many moments of pressure. And here it seems like all of a sudden, this one I can't handle. What's different here? What has happened here? What's this conversation about? What is Moshe saying in this conversation? And more than that is, how does it help? What is the antidote that God gives him? And how does that help the problem? Because if you remember, we just read, what is the antidote? What did God say to him? He didn't say, calm down, Moshe. He didn't say, oh, don't speak that way. What did God say? Gather together 70 elders, and then I'm going to, basically, I'm going to divide. We're not sure. Is that what it's saying? We're going to divide the job. I'm going to give from your spirit to them. And so the Ramban, Nachmanides, says, what does this help? Perhaps it's so that if he has 70 elders who are great men, who now have from Moses' spirit, the Jews won't only complain to Moshe. They have 70 others to complain. It's like, okay, now they have 70 therapists, you know? Because truthfully, they're still not going to blame these 70 for taking them out of Egypt. They're not going to blame these 70 and say to them, how come you're not giving us food? Because they don't hold them responsible. But they still hold Moshe responsible. So what's the purpose of these 70? So Ramban, the Nachmanides, tells us that it is perhaps so that he has other people for them to complain to. 70 therapists in our language, right? And he also continues, or perhaps the fact that he didn't just make them into leaders, but he gave them nevuah, he gave them prophecy. Maybe the Jewish people won't just use them as therapists, but they will think, hey, these are holy men. We can actually complain to them too. It's not just Moshe. We can actually complain to them too. So that's what the Ramban says is the antidote here. Now, but if you remember, there was a time before when Moshe was advised to have help. Do you remember? Parshat Yisro, when his father-in-law came, and he saw that Moshe had this heavy, heavy load. He said to him, how can one person do this alone? You have to divide the tasks. You have to have different judges. You have to have courts of 10, courts of 50, courts of 100, in order so that you are not carrying this. And only when it's a problem that you can't deal with, that they can't deal with, does it come to you. And this was set up not that long ago. So what is this about, the 70 elders that God is going to put Moshe's spirit on them? How is it going to help the issue now? And then, of course, as Carol just mentioned, that it didn't last for more than a day. It was very temporary. God did this, put his spirit on these 70, but it says, v'lo yasfu, and they didn't continue it. It was just for that moment. It was very temporary. So how did it help the situation? But obviously, and we're going to come back to the question, obviously it did help the situation, because after this issue was taken care of, we see that Moshe has many other challenges, and he seems to handle it with his regular equanimity. What do we see later on? Chapter 11, number 26. It says that the two, Eldad and Medad, meanwhile, two men of the nominated elders had remained in the camp because they felt that they were unworthy of greatness. Okay, that's an extra, which this Chumash adds. One was called Eldad and other Medad. The spirit of prophecy nevertheless rested upon them. They were amongst those written, but they did not go out to the tent with the others. Thus they became prophets while in the camp. And then what happened? The lad ran to inform Moshe and said, Eldad and Medad are saying prophecy in the camp. Yeshua, the son of Nun, Moshe's servant from his youth, spoke up and said, Moshe, my master, stop them. And Moshe said to them, beautiful words, he says, are you being jealous on my behalf? If only all God's people were prophets and God would place his spirit upon them. So Moshe handled it with equanimity. He had no problem with the fact that there are two people who are prophesying, and it looked to others like, hey, what are they doing? Are they trying to show that they're as great as the master Moshe? And Moshe is saying, I have no problem with that. I wish all Jewish people would experience this intimacy with God, where they felt that God spoke to them directly.
The 70 men, they never said.
Can I say something?
Yeah. Okay. And then after that story, we see that chapter 12, page 935, comes the issue of Miriam's criticism of Moshe, where Miriam and Aaron talk about Moshe, and whether it's criticizing Moshe, discussing the sister-in-law, it's a family issue. And Moshe again handles it with equanimity. He handles it as the great Moshe would. He prays for Miriam. He doesn't say, okay, I'm out of this family, I've had enough, well, you people don't get it. He handles it the way the Moshe we know would handle this kind of issue. And not only that, God attests at that moment, hey, you think Moshe is just a regular person. He's not a regular person. Who is Moshe? The man Moshe was extremely humble, more so than anyone on the face of the earth. And how he speaks about Moshe and says, when God talks about him, he says, no one is like Moshe. I relate with him mouth to mouth. And he's not just a regular, Moshe is not like any other person on the face of this earth. So God attests to Moshe's greatness after that whole story. And we see that Moshe handles everything from then on, no problem. We never hear this kind of verbiage again. So what exactly happened, and what did this achieve, getting these 70 elders together, and how did it take care of the issue of that Moshe had? Before we go to the actual issue, I just want to bring up a few more places in our Torah where we see leaders who also spoke that way. If you remember Yonah, do you remember the prophet Yonah, who when God saved the city of Nineveh, he also said, I want to die, take me away, rather than me facing the Jewish people's wrath. And then you have Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu, who said some very, very strong words, where he says, I'll just read some of the quotes from Yirmiyahu. O Lord, you enticed me and I was enticed. You overpowered me and prevailed. I am ridiculed all day long. Everyone mocks me. I'm going to skip. Cursed be the day I was born. May the day my mother bore me not be blessed. Cursed be the man who brought my father the news, made him very glad, saying, a child is born to you, a son. He's saying, the guy who told my father Mazel Tov, he should have just been stopped right in his tracks. And he says, why didn't he kill me then? He was there, present when I was born. I shouldn't have been born. My mother's womb should have been my grave. These are very, very strong words from a leader. So what is that all about? And let's get back to Moshe, in Moshe's case, because we're not discussing Yirmiyahu. But what would bring a leader to say words like that? And how would the getting of the 70 elders together and giving them a bit of Moshe's spirit and prophecy, how would that be an antidote for this situation? Okay. I think we have to go back and realize what kind of a generation Moshe was dealing with. These were Jews that had come out of Egypt, had seen God's hand, had seen God's open miracles. Hashem had taken them out of Egypt, had split the sea for them, had given them the Torah. They had witnessed the greatest open miracles ever as an entire nation. And Moshe, although he had dealt with various problems that they had, at this point, after they had gone through Exodus, gone through the coming to Sinai, the revelation at Sinai, Moshe says, this burden is too much to handle, livadi, alone. What is he saying? I tried so hard. I've been trying to inculcate them with the Spirit of God, with what God is all about. That it's not just, we don't just live here, we're not just flesh and blood who need to have steak and sashimi. It's very nice when we come to shul and we have the kiddush afterwards, but is that really the point of all of it? And what he was seeing at this point in his life, he's saying, after all of this that we went through, and they're still saying, where's the steak? Something is the matter. And he's saying, it's like, I can't take this anymore. I don't want to live to see this. Let them have beef. Let them have everything. But I just feel like perhaps my mission in life has not been accomplished. Livadi, I am on my own. It's like, does anyone get it? Does anyone get what we've been trying to accomplish here all this life? We took, the Jews came out of Egypt, but did we get the Egypt out of the Jews? We got them out of there, but the mediocrity that we've been trying to get out of the Jews, it doesn't seem like I have done my job right. Livadi, I feel like I am on my own because it doesn't seem to have been accomplished. If this is what they worry about, after all that they've gone through, after all that they've seen, after all the miracles that they've had, that they could still push and say, where's the beef? How were the dips in shul today? Did the Rebbetzin make this fish or that fish? Then something is the matter. And he's saying, I can't. I just cannot have this because I just feel like my life is a failure. What did I accomplish? So what was the antidote? What did God do to help him with his problem? It wasn't just a matter of giving the people beef. Because God gave them and God dealt with them. And God gave it to them till it was coming out of their noses. But the first thing that God did was say, get together the 70 elders. And I will take from your spirit and I will put it upon these people. Moshe had a unique moment. And like you said, it was temporary, but it was a unique moment, which mostly people do not get to see. But God thought it's extremely important for Moshe to get a glimpse of his effect on the people. And what he did was he took from Moses' spirit and he put it on these 70 so that in a way Moshe should see a mirror of himself. And he should see that what he's doing is not in vain and that his life's work will continue. And that today, 3,328 years after Sinai, we are still learning Torah to Moshe. And there are people who get it. And there are people who got it then. And there will always be people who will continue the legacy that he gave us. That was what God's answer was. He wasn't just telling him, I'm giving you extra people, because that he already had, as we saw in Yitro. He was giving him an opportunity. He was answering what was on his heart, not just what was in his head. He was saying, even you, Moshe, the greatest of all men and the humblest of all men, needs sometimes to get the feedback. And he was giving Moshe this feedback to say, you will continue. The legacy will continue. It is not in vain. The Jews are not all about where's the beef. The spirit is there. It's true, generally, we do a lot of complaining, and we do a lot of complaining about the physical stuff, and we get sidetracked. But it's there, and your legacy and the real thing will continue. And indeed, we know that in every generation, we have a Moses who has a part of the original Moshe. And it's reflected in that generation. And so that was what God was doing. He was answering what was on Moshe's heart.
How well things were going. Of course they were not going well. Of course they didn't have to be slaves.
It's true, like today, you know, people say, oh, the alte gute Zeiten, the good days that they were, you know, but we forget, yes, they were the alte Zeiten, they were the old times, they weren't necessarily that good. Although there were many things about those old times that were. They say even the nostalgia of yesterday's not, of today is not like what it was.
Well, it's much more family oriented now.
So I just, before my husband continues here, I just want to bring it down to us and how we can learn something, because we know every story that's in the Torah is not just there for the sake of that story itself. One of the things that perhaps God put this story here in the Torah for us to learn from, and why he took that step to show Moshe how vital he was and how eternal his teachings would be, is for us to learn how important it is to give feedback to those who give us something, who teach us something, who make a difference in our lives. And I'm just going to briefly repeat the story that we've said a few different times here. I just don't remember if we've done it recently, so I don't want to extend it too long. But I know my husband has told the story of the Nechei Tzahal.
Those who are wounded.
In the IDF. And the story of the one man who was hurt so badly that when they came, his legs were all crushed. Many of his friends who were injured in that particular battle didn't make it. He was in a coma. They ended up having to remove his legs, and he was in a coma. And then the day came when he finally woke up, and he realized he had no legs, and he screamed. And he screamed, "Yikes! What's going on?" So the nurses were alerted. They came, and they were so happy he was alive. Mm-hmm. "Oh, you're up." And he said, "What's going on? Where's my legs?" Right? Anyway, the story continues, and he had a very hard time. Even though, of course, his family was so appreciative that he was alive, to him, he had no legs, and he felt like he was very depressed, and he felt like, what's my value here in this world? And there were different things that he went through in life, but he was very, very depressed. One day, he ended up going on a trip to the USA, which they had as an appreciation for these Tzahal, for the IDF. And part of the trip was that they got to go to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe came into the big hall in 770, the big shul. And the Rebbe sat at the table and spoke. All the wheelchairs were wheeled in. And the Rebbe spoke specifically to these IDF soldiers that were injured. One of the points that the Rebbe made was how he doesn't understand why they are called Nechei Tzahal, the handicapped of the IDF, and he would gently suggest that they should be called Mitsuyanei Tzahal, those that excelled. First of all, because they did excel, and secondly, because often when one is injured, that means God gave him capabilities and qualities that others don't have in other areas of their life. I'm doing it very briefly, this story, because I know we've said it during other classes. The point that I want to make is that when the Rebbe came down, he asked for permission to come and give them each a dollar, make them a shaliach to give tzedakah. And he asked for permission to come down and to shake their hands. And he came down. And when he came to this particular man with no legs, who had been very, very depressed, the man said later, in retrospect, he couldn't believe what happened, the transformation that happened in those few minutes that he saw the Rebbe. The Rebbe pierced into his eyes. Many of his friends who had come over the years to come visit him couldn't look at him. And they would look for any moment to get out of there. Oh, someone, a nurse came in, a therapist came in. There's always a reason to run or not to be there. The Rebbe was there, present with him, looked at him, shook his hand, and he said to him, "Thank you. Thank you." He gave him what he needed. He gave him that feedback. "Thank you for protecting the Jewish people. Thank you for what you did." And everybody needs that thank you. Everyone needs to know that they're appreciated. So hopefully from this story of Moshe Rabbeinu, which seems to be incongruous at first with his personality, it's here, it's not just the story itself, it's what it's here to teach us. That we need to learn to thank and to give feedback to those in our lives.
And just in case it's not clear enough to those listening to the recording, That includes your mother and your father and your spouse.
I just want to mention that this class was based on a class that I heard from Rabbi Jacobson.
Okay, we're right now on page 918 in the Gutnik Chumash. And here is a story which led up to what we know as Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni, exactly 1 month after Pesach, there's a custom to eat matzah. Why is that? Because if people were not able to bring the Passover sacrifice, so they have a month later, they can bring the Passover sacrifice. How come? So there's a story on this page 918. And if I could ask you, Carol, if you could read, starting 9-6, where it says there were two men.
Mm-hmm. There were two men who were ritually impure due to the contact with a dead person and could not make the Pesach lamb on that day. So they came before Moshe and before Aaron on that day. Those men said to him, "We are ritually impure due to contact with a dead person. Why should we be the loser? We've been prevented from offering God's sacrifice in its appointed time with all the children of Israel." Moshe said to them, "Wait. I will hear what God instructs concerning you." God spoke to Moshe, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, any person who becomes unclean from the contact with a dead person or is far away either among you or in future generations should make a Pesach offering for God at a later date." Wow, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. "They should make it in the second month on the 14th day in the afternoon. They should eat it with matzah and bitter herbs. They should not leave over any meat from it until the next morning, and they should not break any of the bones. They should offer it in accordance with all the laws connected with the regular Pesach lamb."
Beautiful. Thank you very much. So that is the story. Now, we don't have a temple, but we do learn something from this. And the Rebbe has a beautiful message. And we're going to expound on this message in various ways. And that is that these people, why were they impure? Well, they were dealing with a dead relative. Now, we understand that a person can be spiritually dead, as it were. Desensitized or non-sensitive at all to spirituality. Here were people who said, "We were helping someone who had a spiritual vacuum. Why should we lose out?" What did God say? If you give up yourself in order to help those with a spiritual vacuum, you're not going to lose out. I'm going to make sure that you will not remain empty. And this is the theme that we're going to expand on today. So, I'd like to share with you a video. This is a certain Rabbi Aaron Weiss. I have to say, Rabbi Osher Weiss, yeah. Personally, I haven't known about him, but it was pointed towards this video, which really tells a wonderful story. I'm going to interject just a few times with a few small points, but it's going to become one point at the end where all of this is leading up to, which will only be underscored with all of the introduction that you are going to hear now. Here we go. All right, what's happening? One minute. Let's press play. All right, there you go.
My late father, Hareini Kapos Mishkalvi.
Can you see me?
Avi Mighty. It is on the first day of Shavuos, 1945, Tovshin Dada, that he arrived in Birkenau, in Auschwitz. And on that very same day, he last saw his father, his mother, five of his siblings. The family was torn asunder. They were sent right to the gas chambers. He and two brothers were sent left to life. One day later, second day Yom Tov, the great Kloisenberger Rebbe, Moiri Varabi, Zecher Tzadik V'Kodesh Lavrocha, arrived in Birkenau. My father came from the little town of Salish. He didn't know the Kloisenberger Rebbe, but he heard a great deal about him. And when my father heard that the Kloisim Rebbe arrived, and he was one barracks, one building next to the place my father stayed, my father very much wanted to know him, to be close to him. But Birkenau was nothing like the Hilton at the Sheraton. You wanted to change your room. You didn't go to reception and ask for another room. It didn't work that way. So in the middle of the night, my father sneaked over to the other barracks and he changed his spot with another person. In the morning, he happily walked over to the Rebbe and said, I made an effort on Baruch Hashem. I was matzliach to be right close to you. And the great Rebbe frowned upon him. And he said, the mindset that a pes helfen, said the gunish helfen. If you think it's going to do you any good, it won't do you any good. My father responded, of course it's going to do me good. We'll be able to talk and learning. And the Rebbe was taken aback and he said, Bocha, you're in Auschwitz and you want to talk and learning. To which my father responded, yes, Rebbe, of course I want to talk and learning. If we won't talk and learning, how will we prevail? How will he make it? How will we live through this Gehenna? The Rebbe was moved. He hugged my father. And for the next 12 months, Leizos Yodem and Tachyode, they were together. From Birkenau to Warsaw, to clear away the rubble after the uprising was destroyed, ghetto was destroyed. From Warsaw to Dachau, from Dachau to Tutsi, from Tutsi to Mildorf, until they were liberated. And right after the liberation, the Rebbe asked for volunteers to care for the dead. Because the bodies were everywhere. The bodies of those Kedoshim that were murdered. No one volunteered. My father was the only one. So they had an American Army Jeep and an Army driver. And day and night they roamed the fields and brought the deceased to Kv Yisrael. When it was over, the Rebbe asked my father whether he has any special request. And my father said, yes. I want a bracha to have children, Talmidei Chachamim. Upon which the Rebbe gave...
I want to interject here. He's asking for a blessing that he should have children who shall become Torah scholars. Now, I want you to be very particular in the wording of the response he receives.
I'm a bracha that his children should light up the world with the light of Torah. But a year and a half...
You see, he's not saying that it will be Torah scholars. They'll light up the world with the light of Torah, and you'll see the context as we keep going.
After the liberation, after caring for the dead, they dedicated all their energies to care for the living, to try to rebuild Beis Yisrael, building mikvahs, establishing yeshivas for the boys, schools for the girls. After a year and a half, my father approached the Rebbe and he said, I think I have done enough. I think I paid my share and I want to go back to learning. My father was a tremendous Ilui. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham.
Ilui means a genius, right? So genius of genius. Ilui, yes. Ilui, right. Okay.
And he told the Rebbe, I haven't opened a Gemara for more than 2 years. I want to go back to learning. And the Rebbe once again frowned upon him and he said, Moshe, you know nothing about Mesirus Nefesh. Really? You know nothing?
The literal translation of Mesirus Nefesh, I'm sorry, the general translation of Mesirus Nefesh is self-sacrifice, but its translation is Mesirus, which means giving over, dedicating, Nefesh, your soul. Now the next word you're going to hear is Guf, which is body. And with that in mind, we're going to continue because this is the reason that we're listening to this and for the little bit that follows.
Think about Mesirus Nefesh. You think that depriving oneself from food or drinks is Mesirus Nefesh. No, that's Mesirus Aguf. Closing your Gemara for Klal Yisrael. That is Mesirus Nefesh.
What he's saying is that it's one thing to give up your physical pleasure, your physical comforts, to help other people, but it's another to pause your spiritual growth in order to help another. Now, we have to be very, very careful. I want to say this at the outset, because we're going to dwell on this point in from various aspects. This does not mean that we can throw all of Judaism just to be helping people in the way that we think. Obviously, we're talking about, and you can already see by the how this his son grew up, and as you shall see pictures of him, that obviously he did have regular Torah study and the observance of mitzvot. But a person can consider just dedicating himself to his spiritual growth, or compromising the time that he gives for his spiritual growth in order to be concerned with other people. Now, just how did we get here? Remember, we're talking about tending to a dead relative, right? Someone who has a spiritual vacuum. Why should we lose out because we were tending to a relative who has a spiritual vacuum? Now we can continue.
Needless to say, my father stayed on with the Rebbe. And for years, these two giants that did not despair over their personal tragedy, the Rebbe lost a wife and 11 children. My father was a young boy. He was 17, 18 years old. He lost his parents and most of his siblings. But they found the strength and the courage to dedicate all their energies to rebuild Torah, to rebuild Yiddishkeit in America, and then in Eretz Yisrael. 65 years passed, fast forward, and my father was 80 years old. Gvulis. And I planned to go to Poland for a Holocaust study with a group of my Hasidim and good friends. With trepidation, I approached my father and asked him, "Would you want to come along?" And I was totally surprised when he said, "Yes, I will come along." And I was really afraid, what will happen? How will he react when we will stand next to the train tracks in Birkenau? And my father, with tremendous courage and strength, stood there and he said, "This is the very place where I last saw most of my family." And it is then the first time that I ever heard from my father what were the last words that he heard from his father before the family was torn apart. And my father told me the last words I heard from my father when he looked around and he realized what's happening. He said, "Moshe, kikzachim avdan ebridalach. Moshe, watch over your brothers." And I think that my father's interpretation was not only referring to his two younger brothers, Hershey and Yechiel. He took that as a command. Care for your brothers, care for your brethren. Kulanu b'nei Yishuv anachnu. We all share the same fathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, v'Yaakov. We are all HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children. That was my father's interpretation. And those two giants, my great Rebbe, the Kloyser Mager Rebbe, and my late father, those two giants, rose to the challenge and dedicated all their energies for Klal Yisrael. My dear friend.
Okay. Yeah. So, with that in mind, we're talking about tending to the relative who has a spiritual vacuum. We can now go to the beginning of the Torah portion on page 910 in the Gutnik Chumash. Now, this Torah portion really begins with one of the strangest words. I'd like to share something that I heard last night. Last night there was an event in Vancouver. And this is an advance of the Rebbe's yard site. This, for a particular reason, they cannot have it in Vancouver on the actual time of the Rebbe's yard site. So they had it last night. And somebody told the following in the name of the former chief rabbi of England, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, of whom I have said very many great things in the past. He said that probably in all of history, the Rebbe is the only leader who passed away without any followers, because he made sure that all his followers should become leaders. Now, this is tremendously powerful, because let's take a look at the Torah portion today, where it says in verse 1 and 2, Moshe, God spoke to Moshe as follows. Davar el Aaron, you should speak to Aaron, v'martelov, and you should say to him, Baha'alotcha. Now, I realize that in the English translation it says, when you fire up the lamps of the menorah. But the truth of the matter is, there's a word in Hebrew for lighting, which is called hadlaka. Keshetadlik, when you will light. We say, lahadlik ner Shabbat kodesh. Baha'alotcha simply means, when you will cause it to come up. Or as Rashi says, when you will cause it to come up on its own. Now I realize that this theme is something that we have heard about on this parsha in previous years. So the reason that I'm repeating it here is because today we're going to see it with a certain form of reminder that adds to what we've heard about until now. So right now, before we go any further, we're just going to talk about causing the fire to come up. So Rashi right away says, what's this strange expression? He says, well, the high priest has to make sure that you can't just light it and walk away. You have to make sure that the fire will continue burning on its own. So in the homiletic interpretation, we were talking about influencing other people and lighting them up, that they should become a source of life, not just say something and walk away. It's like spraying. When you spray, you don't know who you're going to get and who you're going to miss. Now, my purpose in bringing all this up, and especially the introduction I just gave, is because here we saw something tremendous. We saw someone who was told, you need to sacrifice your spiritual growth on behalf of other people. But you might say, so here was a great man, the Kloisenberger Rebbe, who was a very great man. There's very many great stories, Holocaust stories as well, from him, from his time in the camp. But in any event, what am I? What do I know? Now, I know you've heard this on a basic level here many times, because in any Chabad house you'll hear this very many times. The point is, can I, whoever I am, with whatever I know, do I view myself as simply somebody who, I come to shul whenever I do, come to classes whenever I do, and I get my spiritual injection, and it makes me feel better, however one would like to describe it, and that's it. Or do I view myself as someone who can ignite other people to become a source of light? So with that in mind, I'd like to share with you a story which the Rebbe told, and even though we've told it here, and the Rebbe told it more than once, it's appropriate for me to mention it because the individual in the story, he passed away recently. So this would be a merit for his soul, and it's a short story. There's a businessman, his name is David Chase. He was a tremendous philanthropist, and he had his own yacht, as many people of that stature do. And in 1981, he began putting on tefillin. The Rebbe had a pair of tefillin purchased for him, given to him. So anyway, he starts putting on tefillin, and he has his captain, whose name was Dick Winters. I'm sorry. What direction was the boat facing? Because he wants to do what King Solomon asked. That when they built the first temple, Shlomo HaMelech asked that everybody around the world should face towards this place when they pray. That's why we face in this part of the world, it's the east. So at any rate, he told him. So anyway, a few days later, they're there on the yacht again, And again, he asks these winters, you know, what's the direction? So he says, are you trying to learn navigation? Is that why you're asking me the direction? He says, no, I just need to know for a religious matter. So he says, because, you know, I pray and I got to face Jerusalem. All right. The next Sunday, the yacht was docked at Block Island in the Atlantic Ocean. And this Dick Winters asked David Chase, he's not Jewish, obviously, if he could have an hour to spend with his wife. No problem. And he said, how come? He said, when I discovered that you are praying every single day, it made me think about I should also follow my own faith. So I decided I wanted to leave for an hour to go to church with my wife. And it's interesting, when the Rebbe told this story, he didn't say all of the details that I've mentioned here. I've mentioned these details here just because when you have all the details, there's more credibility to it, which obviously there is. And David Chase has mentioned this story a number of times. I'm sure it's in a video somewhere. I couldn't find a video in the time that I prepared, but it's, I found at least in print. But the point is, when the Rebbe told this story, he added something which is not our main point, but I really took note of this. And the Rebbe said in Yiddish that we could say that thinking is also a prayer. That thinking about God is also a prayer. Remember who the Rebbe is talking about. Talking about this non-Jewish person who gets inspired by a businessman who decides that he's going to pray. Right? And he's not a rabbi or whatever. Right? And the fact that he caused his navigator to think about God. So the point is that here, this is about, we all can view ourselves, and in the Rebbe's view, we all should view ourselves as people who are going to ignite others. So for example, you meet somebody on a plane, or if you're living in a city where you go on the bus or subway regularly, and you bump into somebody Jewish, or you hear somebody speaking Hebrew, do you feel a little scratch? I should say hi, because who knows, maybe I'll just remind them that they're Jewish. Maybe they'll think about God, right? Which is exactly how very, very many people have made their ways into Chabad houses. And so here we go. Here is now a story about, told by Yehuda Avner, who also passed away not too long ago, maybe a year ago or a little bit less. And he served, I think it was 5, if I'm not mistaken, prime ministers of Israel, top secret classified information, totally religious Jew. And I guess he was wise enough that they all needed him. And in this particular case, when Menachem Begin came to see the Rebbe, so he came with Menachem Begin, and as you will hear now, he came back to report to the Rebbe, and as he will say, some of the information is still classified. I'm also going to interject in the middle later on at one point, because also as a side point, which I believe shows such far-sightedness of the Rebbe, and you're about to hear it. So here goes.
On the personal staff of 5 Israeli prime ministers, in 1977, after meeting with President Carter, Menachem Begin sent him to report to the Rebbe.
There's still segments of that meeting that are classified. I must have spoken for half an hour. I had notes non-stop. And then the Rebbe began to comment. We were now close to midnight. And I was very tired. But the Rebbe was a sprightly and as fresh as ever. He saw I was tired. He leaned over, put his hand on mine. I wasn't sitting right in front of him. I was sitting at the side of his desk. He put his hand on mine. and he says, Rabbi Yehuda. Do I remember these words? Ato makir osono kolkach. Lama ata lo mishtoyech eleinu. You know us so well, why don't you belong to us? Now I shall never know whether it was only because I was tired that I had the temerity to say what I really felt, or whether I would have said it had I not been tired. And I heard myself saying to the Rebbe, Ki yesh li b'mishpachti eile asher roim b'Rebbe kochot shehu eino roe ba'atzmo. That I have within my own family those who see the Rebbe powers which the Rebbe does not recognize in himself. And he got a very serious look in his eye. And he said to me these words. He said, Yesh kinire anoshim azukukim lekobayim. There are evidently people who need crutches. And then he went on, Ani agid lecho, ma ani mishtode lasus. I will tell you what I try to do. I'll give straight away the English translation. He said, Rabbi Yehuda, imagine you're looking at a cupboard. And I tell you, open that cupboard. You open the cupboard. And you see inside a candle. But I tell you, that is not a candle. That is a lump of wax with a piece of string in between. Musai ha-shavo v'ha-chut ne-hofchim le-ner. When does the wax and the wick become a candle? Ka-asher ato mevi le-hovo el ha-chut. When you bring a flame to the wick. Az ha-shavo v'ha-chut ne-hofchim Lener. Lemo, that is to say, they fulfill the purpose for which they were created. Zemasha ani mishtode lasois. That is what I try to do. Shekol ish for isha yekayim esamatora shalamana heim nivro. That every man and woman should fulfill the purpose for which they were created. When you bring the flame to the wick is inside, and that is the soul, then it brings to life the body, which is the wax, and the body of the soul fulfill the purpose for which they were created. And that is by the Esha Torah, the fire of Torah. And then, this I can say, he began to talk to me about the Sixth Fleet in the Mediterranean. In detail. And about how it would be of strategic advantage to Israel if we could persuade Washington to establish a supply base for the Sixth Fleet in Haifa.
Now, before we go further, I just want to interject something. This does not take away from the message, because we're talking about, we heard, and I'll comment later. But I'm just saying to myself, and I saw this recently, I said to myself, imagine if there were such a presence in the Mediterranean Sea, now that Israel has found oil, and there's a whole issue of protecting it, and all the terrorism and all that, just imagine an enormous American army ship, etc., over there. It would have a huge impact. And let's face it, at the present moment, the world runs on gas, on gasoline, and on oil. That's how the world runs. So it's just interesting. Anyway, back to the point, and then we'll make a comment.
It's 2:10 in the morning. I rise. He escorts me to his door. Takes me by the hand, both hands. And I say to him, Ha'im HaRebbe Hidlik Et HaNer Sheli, has the Rebbe lit my candle? He said, Lo. Nosati Lecha Es HaGafur, Rak Ato Yechol Lahadlik Es HaNer Shelcha. I have given you the match. Only you can light your own candle.
All right. So on this point, I want to say that there's an added point here, which was, I think it's fair to say, unique to the Rebbe. When the Rebbe took leadership on the 10th of Shvat in 1951, he said to the people, this is on recording, we can hear it today, don't get any pipe dreams, I'm paraphrasing from the Yiddish, don't get any pipe dreams. Of course I'm going to help you, but you're going to have to exert yourself. And this really is something that the Rebbe did, obviously, in a unique way. And I'd like to share a little thing about that. Something that used to occur when the Rebbe was alive, and etc., which we don't have since the Rebbe passed away. And that is, when I was a kid, I always wondered, the Rebbe, for example, he'd go to the previous Rebbe's resting place, he'd come back with a new campaign. And very often, let's say it was a few days before Hanukkah, he came with a Hanukkah campaign. A few days before Purim campaign. And I said to myself, and I'm a little kid, well, I wasn't that kid, I was a teenager, and I'm saying to myself, to get this really done, I mean, if you would have said it a month before, you know, but now, and Lubavitch was not as gargantuan as it is today. So, and now the Rebbe says something, so everybody's scrambling and you're squeezing his arm. And you know, I got older, I think about it, and it occurred to me as follows. Any time in Lubavitch we came to a point where we sort of, since the last campaign, we found that we could breathe, the Rebbe would come along with a new one. And what the Rebbe actually did is compressed into us the ability to do much more than we ever believed we could, because there was always an urgent imperative. So the idea of lighting up others, the imperative that every one of us not view ourselves just as a student or however you want to view yourself, but as somebody who can light up others, but also, as we heard here, to give another person the ability and the willingness to ignite themselves even more so they can ignite other people. And I'd like to share a story on this theme, because a person takes up so much time for dealing with the community, so then what's going to happen with his own spirituality? Will he stagnate in his spirituality? Even you may say, well, maybe he should stagnate, but it's the important thing to do. But it's not really the case. There is a dispute between the Babylonian Talmud and the Jerusalem Talmud. The Babylonian Talmud says that a person who serves the public in good faith, that his learning is maintained. He doesn't forget his learning. The Jerusalem Talmud says it differently. A person, same thing, who serves the public in good faith, his Torah study is actually blessed. And in this vein, I'd like to share a story about Rabbi Gutnick, the father of the Gutnicks today. In other words, the one who sponsored this Chumash that we're using right now, his father. I've already told the story how after the war, he, on his way to Canada, the ship ended up in Australia. I've told that story several times. But here is the thing that he once complained to the Rebbe, because the Rebbe put him in a position of not only being a rabbi, but tremendous communal work, and he had a tremendous reputation. He was an orator par excellence. But he complained to the Rebbe, he said that when he was in yeshiva, he had a study partner, and his name was Rabbi Gifter, if I'm not mistaken. And Rabbi Gifter, this is not in the Chabad yeshiva, Rabbi Gifter became world-renowned as a great, great Torah scholar. And he said to the Rebbe, look what's become of him, and what's going to happen to my Torah learning? So the Rebbe said to Rabbi Gutnick, that if you commit to 1 hour every single day of intense study, but it has to be a full hour intense, then you will gain, either he said, more or as much as him in learning. So with that in mind, and with the time that we have left, I'd like to show you the next video, which that we will conclude. Now, the person is speaking in Hebrew, but if you can read the English, this is truly astonishing, where in essence, he's a person who is not Chabad, he's the head of an organization, Chinuch Atzmai, as you're going to hear, and a strange offer where he could switch from serving the public to a great position of scholarship, and how the Rebbe literally read his mind without him saying anything. This is the story. Now, the reason that I sort of made this introduction is because while this is a story of somebody who is a person of great learning and spiritual stature and involved in the public, but the punchline at the end still speaks to us, where the Rebbe says to him there is an opinion in Jewish law, I won't say the end of the sentence, so that this Torah portion, that it's not just about lighting a flame, walking away, that every one of us really ought to, this is the Rebbe's view, every one of us ought to view ourselves, that when we encounter another Jewish person, we have responsibility to ignite them, and as I said to you, to Yehuda Avner, give them a match so that they can ignite themselves even more to illuminate others. And by the way, if a person does not do that, this sort of the implied from that last story is, I shouldn't say it so negatively, if you don't, if you just keep all of your growth to yourself, you're just a lump of wax. Right? Here is the story.
Then I went again to my spiritual teacher, the one she loved was touching my precious heart. Rabbi Avraham Lazerson is chairman of Chinuch Atzmai, the independent religious education system in Israel. In 1992, while in New York for a convention, he came to the Rebbe for a blessing.
באותו יום הייתי לפני שבאתי לרבי, אני באתי למשרדי אגודת ישראל במנהטן. שם מתפללים מנחי הרבה אנשים שעובדים בסביבה, באזור, במשרדים. היה אחד מהם, שהוא הכיר את אבי, אבי היה גאון גדול בתורה, והיה צדיק גדול, חסיד גדול, הוא היה המחנך והרבה של הפני מנחם, של הרבי מגור זצ"ל. והוא אומר לי, מה יש לך עם עסקנות ציבורית? אני הכרתי את אבא שלך. ואבא שלך היה יהודי, שכולו תורה, כולו חסידות, תעזוב את העסקנות. ככה, וזה היה לפני שהרדתי בוויליאם סטריט, במשרדי אגודת ישראל, לעצור טקסי צהוב, אתה מכיר את המוניות הצהובות, להביא אותי למינכה לשעה 3 לקרונייץ, כדי לפגוש את הרבי, לקבל את ברכת הדרך לשובי ארצה. אומר לי כך, אני עתיר נכסים, אני רבי קווינס, ואיתך חוזר, תפתח כולל, ותתיישב בכולל, ואני אממן את הכולל תקופה כמה שנים. אני מוכרח לומר שזה שיבש את כל רעיוניי. הוא דרך לי על המצפון, על היבלת המצפונית היהודית. התחלתי לחשוב, אתם יודעים שהחיים הציבוריים הם לא קלים. יש הרבה כפיות טובה של ציבור כלפי עובדים כל כך הרבה בשביל הציבור, שלא על מנת לקבל שום פרס. והכל ביחד, בבית זה שליח מישהו שאני לא מכיר, ומטיף לי דברי תוכחה ומוסר שמנוגעים עד התשתית הפנימית שלי. והתחלתי לחשוב, אבל אמרתי לו, אני מוכרח לנסוע, אני מוכרח להספיק לשעה שלוש למנחה. וקרונת נתן לי את הטלפון שלו, הוא כבר לא חי היום. ובכל הדרך אני חושב, מה זה פה? זה עוד מן השמיים, זה לא פשוט, כל השיחה הזאת. ואני מרוב ששוחחתי איתו ועד שהרכב בא, עד שהגעתי, כבר היה בחזור השץ למטה. אז המתנתי בחדר שם, כשהרבי יצא מהמעלית, יחד עם כל הציבור. ולפתע אני רואה מהמדרגות, הרבי עולה בצעדים איטיים, כפי שאמרתי קודם, עם שני המזכירים, עם שני המזכירים שמלווים אותו. והוא נכנס, אז הבליט קורונה אומר לו, תוסי זה הבליט הזה מפה ירושלים. אז הוא נהנה עם הראש ואומר, יאיך וישך קונם, כן אני מכיר אותו. ואמרתי לו לרב שאני חוזר היום לירושלים, אני אולי ברוך איך הוא זה מוציא איתך משולם. אז כדרכו כל פעם אז הוא אומר לי, הוא עונה ואומר, פרוט גזון תראית, אז הוא זיין בהצלוחו, רבו ומופלוגו. זה היה הנוסח של הרבי. פרוט גזון תראית, הצלוחו, רבו ומופלוגו. ואני, כשאני מדבר איתו, עדיין מתחוצצות במחשבתי ובמוחי, אני לא יכול להתנתק מהשיחה של היהודי ההוא, וחשבתי, זה רעיון. והרב אחרי שהוא מברך אותי, אז הוא ממשיך עם הסידור היד בדרכו לחדרו. הוא כבר עמד על מפתן החדר, ואנחנו מסתכלים לעברו, מלווים אותו במבטנו כולם, כל הציבור שהיה שם. באמצע, הפתיע את כולנו, הרב מסתובב חזרה, והוא מגיע אליי. ובלי אומר ובלי דברים, בלי הסברים, אומר לי בלשון הזה, סידוע די אינה לוחה. אז האויסק בצורכי ציבור באמונו, שתית איכר פון ממי שאויסק בטויר. פורט גזונטרית בהצלוח הרב ומופלובה. והוא מסתובב בחזרה והוא נכנס לחדר. בלי שדיברנו ובלי ששטחתי בפניו את מחשבותיי, לא הייתה לי, אני רציתי באמת על זה לדבר אז, אבל זה לא שייך היה בתנאים הנוכחים. אבל הוא כאילו שהוא קורא ממש, הוא קורא את המחשבות שמתרוצצות במוחי באותם רגעים. והוא משאיר אותי נדעם ממש, הוא קלה על ה, ממש, אני אמרתי, ממש קרא את המחשבות, זה היה משהו. ואני רוצה לספר שאני הספרתי את הסיפור הזה בבואי ארצה לכמה גדולי ישראל, לאו דווקא מהמחנה החסידי, רק מהמחנה הליטאי. אני בבית אצל הרבה גדולי ישראל מכל הזרמים, לאו דווקא כאלה שהולכים בשיטת לובביץ' אם להשתמש בלשון המתה, ודאי למבין. ואני אמרתי להם, זה סיפור שבדידי ועובדי, זה סיפור שאני באוזניי שמעתי ובעיניי ראיתי, לא רק אני הרי יודע, אני לא, רק הקדוש ברוך הוא בריך כלי ג'ולי, ואני לא יודע, אני לא יודע. וכמובן כל הדרך בחזרה במטוס זה ליווה אותי כל הדרך עד שהגעת לארץ.
So here's the deal. I just want to close with this. So if we can take the Rebbe's call, no matter who we are, that my purpose is to ignite someone else, look at what we get spiritually, right? Even if we think we're closing our books, look at what we get spiritually. All right? Thank you. Mm-hmm.